The Mishnah in Perkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers, asks the famous question, Eizehu Ashir, who is a wealthy individual? Sameach b'chelkoi, an individual who is happy with their lot in life. It's a very nice answer, but certainly one would want to believe that the answer should perhaps be Donald Trump, maybe Bill Gates. What does this mean, Sameach b'chelko? Svarim actually say that the reason why it doesn't mention those individuals as an Ezu Ashir is because they're also under the category of a Gibor, Mechubad, and a Chochem. The Mishnah is asking who is only rich and not the other characteristics. Today, I'd like to present a different thought to this question. Why is this the definition in Jewish philosophy of an Ashir, someone who is rich? We know the famous expression that money can't buy you happiness, or the cliche, money can't buy you love. It isn't only being mesameach b'chelko, being content with what you have, that is the key to happiness. In fact, Abraham Lincoln once said, quote, most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. But what is the trick? How does a person unlock this door to becoming mesameach, becoming truly happy with themselves? How is this accomplished? To answer this, we must study a striking point in Megillas Esther. We find a man by the name of Haman, a very powerful individual, second to the king, who had a tremendous amount of children, wealth, and he was even invited to private parties. He turned to his wife, Zeresh, and said perhaps the most difficult sentence in all of Tanakh, Kol zeh einenu shayva li, everything here, all the great things that I have, it's worthless to me. Maybe not the nicest thing to say to his wife, but what exactly does this mean? How could Haman make such a statement? How can we understand his negative midah, negative character trait? To answer all these questions, I believe it stems from the origin of a surprise party. We know that when a person has a party, you prepare for it, you always want it to be a surprise. But why? What's the real difference? After all, the party's still going to happen. And there's always that uncomfortable feeling, if it's happening to you, that you really know about it, but you have to pretend that it's still a surprise. What's the whole purpose of it? I'd like to share with you two scenarios. You have one person that is anticipating that they're going to be having a party. And for weeks in advance, they plan the exact cake, what it'll look like, the exact music, the invitations, their friends that are going to be attending. And the second person has no idea there's a party. Comes home after a very, very difficult day at work. Maybe it's his birthday, no one recognizes it. Puts the key in the lock, opens up his door, anticipating some TV dinner or some Shabbos leftovers in the fridge, to a huge surprise. Now, what's the starting point? The first individual was anticipating that he would be having a cake, and he was anticipating the music and the friends. Everything he already was taking for granted that it was going to come about, and that it was coming to him on that day. The second person, the surprise party, that person was expecting nothing. And therefore, the first individual that prepared the cake and prepared everything, when things don't necessarily go exactly as he anticipated, he may not be excited. He may not be happy, and in fact, he might be upset. How come this person didn't show up? And why didn't they properly bring the food that we ordered? But the second person who is surprised will not care if someone didn't show up, or maybe some of the food didn't taste so great. Because the smallest thing that that person receives, that individual will be eternally grateful. This is the message of Haman. Haman had everything, but he didn't appreciate them because he considered that everything he had, it was his. It was coming to him. It was all mine. He took it for granted. And therefore, this is why a small little thing that one simple little Jew, a nobody, wouldn't bow down to him, that was reason enough for Haman to feel absolutely no joy. The fact that Mordechai HaYehudi would not bow down, made everything else that he had utterly worthless. The Gemara asks, Haman min HaTorah Minayin, where do we find, even though the story, Purim, of course, happened, it's part of Tanakh, it's not in the actual five books of the Torah, where do we find in Chumash itself a hint to Haman? The Gemara answers, it can be found in the very first Parsha in the Torah, Parshas Bereishis. Hamin ha'etz asher sevisicha levilti achol mimenu achalt. With regard to Adam HaRishon, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructed him, you can enjoy and partake of every single thing in this world, but Haman, or Hamin ha'etz, this tree over there, this one little tree, don't eat from it. What exactly is the connection between Adam HaRishon and Haman HaRasha? And of course, they are complete worlds apart, but there is one underlining connection. That when it came to Adam HaRishon, everything belonged to him. He could eat and do whatever he wanted, but he fell prey to partake of the forbidden fruits. Even owning the entire world wasn't satisfactory for this person, or for anyone else for that matter. If you feel it's all coming to you, you won't appreciate it. And you'll only look for that one thing. That one thing that you're missing, you're not going to be Sameach L'chelko, happy with your lot. We just read Parsha Zachor. Parsha Zachor, we're supposed to remember the nation of Amalek. Timcha Seicher Amalek. Wipe them out. Destroy them. Remove them from the face of the earth. But how? We don't know who they are. I can point my finger in every direction. I have no idea where I'm pointing to. But the truth is, even if we could point at Amalek, as I always say, when we point our finger at someone, three more fingers are pointing back toward ourselves. And I believe the message of Timcha Zecher Amalek doesn't mean merely to wipe out that nation over there, but also to realize that there's a little bit of Amalek within us ourselves. And we are being instructed, Timcha Zecher Amalek, remove the negative traits from within ourselves. Remove the traits of Haman, who from Haman is a direct descendant of Amalek. Remove from within yourself this feeling of entitlement, that everything is coming to me and I deserve it. You take it for granted. Such an individual will not be happy with what they have. One of the Dalad mitzvot, a Purim, is giving tzedakah, specifically matanos avyonim. One could ask, what does giving a few pennies to charity, what does that have anything to do with the theme of Purim, the Purim story? The Gemara Brachos says, Agra de Tanisa tzedakos, that if you want to know what's the great reward for fasting, You would think maybe doing tshuva, not eating for an entire day. No, the Gemara says the reward for fasting is tzedakah. It's the charity that we give, says Rashi. Rashi explains that when we feel the pain and hunger during our own fasts, we may at that point then realize that the aniyim, those impoverished individuals, always feel that way every day of their lives. By giving tzedakah, therefore, we realize how fortunate we really are. Matanos Levionim fosters this idea of being mesamech v'chelko, being truly happy with our lot, with everything that we have. In addition to Shabbos Zachar, we're also celebrating the Ufruf of this very wonderful boy who is soon to get married. It's appropriate to celebrate this joyous occasion on Shabbos Zachar, for it is a Shabbos of remembering. Remembering this message. And I'd like to conclude with a stirring poem entitled "The Art of a Good Marriage." Happiness in marriage is not something that just happens. A good marriage must be created. In marriage, the little things are the big things. It is never being too old to hold hands. It's remembering to say, "I love you," at least once a day. It is never going to sleep angry. It is at no time taking the other for granted. The courtship should not end with a honeymoon. It should continue through the years. It is having a mutual sense of values and common objectives. It is standing together, facing the world. It's forming a circle of love that gathers the whole family. It is doing things for each other, not in the attitude of duty or sacrifice, but in the spirit of joy. It is speaking words of appreciation and demonstrating gratitude in thoughtful ways. It is not looking for perfection in each other. It is cultivating flexibility, patience, understanding, and a good sense of humor. It is having the capacity to forgive and forget. It's giving each other an atmosphere in which each can grow old. It is a common search for the good and the beautiful. It is establishing a relationship in which the independence is equal, dependence is mutual, and the obligation is reciprocal. It is not only marrying the right partner, it's about being the right partner. My bracha to you is but one word, Zachor, remember. Good Shabbos.